This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is brought to you by Gunn Street Wiring, a micro-instrument electronics company obsessed with overall quality. That's right, they're a new approach to the guitar wiring market. Because, of course, when it comes to music, there is endless variety. But when it comes to your instruments wiring, your manufacturer generally gives you one type. However, Gunn Street Wiring put forth a shiny alternative by creating a massive range of different wiring harnesses suitable for every single musical style. They have a beautiful website where you can navigate around selecting your instrument shape, then choosing between 50s modern and hybrid wiring harnesses, and within that, every single different type of harness you can possibly imagine. It's an affordable mod, and if you go with Gunn Street Wiring, it's a mod you simply won't regret. Check them out, gunstreetwiringshop.com. Welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hi.
And Matthew Knight.
Hello there.
That's right, everyone.
You're sounding particularly action hero-y today, Joe.
I've been going for sort of a more presentery style voice recently for the intro, just to draw people in, new listeners. I'm trying to give them the illusion of some sort of professionalism before inevitably you break everything down.
Letting everybody down and them deleting the podcast and then deleting their podcast app and then throwing their phone in the toilet.
That is normally the way I
imagine. Unlistening to the episodes.
Unlistening to them.
Yeah, like going to therapy and just blocking them out forever.
Well, this is a great start. So last week it was even worse because I was away and you had ex-podcast host Mark Packham and you two guys. How did that go?
Brilliant. It was probably one of the best podcasts
we've ever done. Well. Much better than this old rubbish. In fact, what I would suggest you do is, even if you listen to last week's episode, just delete this one and go back and listen to that one again.
Just listen to it again.
Oh, it's so fantastic. Wonderful. No jingles. What else wasn't there?
Were jingles. I added the jingles.
I know. I read out the names properly, except... I think I maybe read out too many. I don't know, to be honest.
It was awful. The ending of the podcast is one of the worst. Audio experiences of my life.
The thing is that we weren't like I sort of forgot that we do that, and I just couldn't find the names anywhere. Yeah, and I went back to last week's podcast, and they weren't there either.
Being organized. No, unfortunately, I keep them on a document that I don't share with you, so I appreciate that's actually tricky.
Is that because it's got, like, people's bank details and stuff?
Exactly, yeah.
I don't sort of know what sort of things you get asked for when you join Patreon. Is it stuff like your PIN number? Not PIN number. PIN number RAS syndrome. Reductive acronym syndrome.
Yes, absolutely, because it's a personal identification number.
Yeah.
We did this a while ago with the Yamaha BB bass, because of course BB stands for broad
RAS
bass.
Syndrome. Love it.
So Yamaha broad.
Where were you last week anyway?
Bass.
Why weren't you here?
I went on two holidays. I think I'd done a podcast after I came back from Spain, but this time I went away to Wales. I hired out a little slate miner's cottage, and me and my girlfriend went there. I took a very nice Artin Luthery parlor acoustic. We took that, an Arteria Microbrute, and my Gibson ES 175, and then I just took a monitor and a laptop actually, and ran everything on the ES 175 through Positive Grid through their bias amp.
All right.
We just wrote some music. I cooked all day, it was just like a little log fire, so I had to make a fire, cook a stew. Played some
over the log
guitar.
Fire.
Yeah. No, there was a separate
It was like a slow cooker and stuff. It was very nice. It was very nice. But it is good to be back, of course, because I've been away. I missed a few things, including the podcast and something that you two attended over the weekend. It was, of course, the maiden voyage of the aptly named UK Guitar Show, not to be confused with the London International Guitar Show, which is completely different. So this was,
or
the,
even
the,
just the Guitar Show,
the
in
Guitar
Birmingham.
Show, which is also completely different. I people need to come up with better names for these things. But the UK Guitar Show was the first event, guitar show event, put on by Future Publishing, responsible for Total Guitar and Guitarist magazine, amongst others. And you two headed down. When did you go on the Sunday?
You two were there.
God, really? I love you two.
What's that? That must have been on the Saturday, Matt, because we were there on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
a shame. They heard we were going on the Sunday and we're like, can't be in the same room as those boys.
I'm desperately trying to,
think of some lyrics, weren't you?
I was, yeah.
Sunday, bloody Sunday. That's all I can think of in relation to I don't even know.
The only thing that comes to mind is the Joshua Tree, and I can't think of anything.
I've seen you two live.
What, me and Joe? Yeah. We're always hanging out together.
How was the UK Guitar Show? It was the first one. Did you enjoy it?
I liked the vintage. There was two levels. Uh-huh. The vintage zone, the vintage floor, and the normal floor. I don't know what the second one was called.
The normal area, I assume, that was made up of your major brands, Fender, Music Man, people like that.
Yeah, but the vintage area was quite cool. I'm guessing Future organised most of that. But they had a bunch of old Marshalls there. They had a little Marshall head called the Fuzz Reverb Unit. And it looked like the 2061, that kind of two input volume tone little amp they still make now, the little 20 watt, but it had inbuilt fuzz and reverb, which I thought was quite cool. I sat atop two little mini like PA speakers.
Man, that sounds rad.
Yeah,
it was really cool. It was really cool.
They had a Capri, I think they're called,
Ford Capri.
Ford Capri, yeah, with a Marshall wheels. Didn't go very fast because the wheels are square. No, it was a little Marsh lamp they made that I think they only ever came in red. And the front is like straight and then the bit where the controls are is slanted. So it kind of looks really boutique, but it was made like 50 years ago.
Wow, that's super cool.
There was some really old Fenders there and some really old guitars. And a couple of old Les Pauls. Rory Gallagher's Strat was there.
Yes, I've seen a few pictures being shared around the Guitar Nerds Facebook group.
Facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsGroups He did not look after his guitars very well.
No, there's hardly any sunburst left on the original one.
And, you know, I've seen a couple of the custom shop ones, and I'm not really a fan of how they do the relicking on that particular one, because it's so heavy relic, they don't do it by hand. Or as far as I'm aware, a lot of it's done like template. And when you compare it to the original, you're like, man, that's just like one filthy guitar.
Yeah, yeah. it's a bit mad, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the guy must have literally just like sweated acid to like have a guitar that ruined. Absolutely mental. But yeah, so that was quite cool. The vintage area was nice, and they had a stage down there and stuff, and it was a good place to like get away from the rest of the event floor. Although actually, we were saying before we started this podcast, it wasn't as loud as some other guitar shows have been to, which was actually
and that's a
really
positive.
Nice.
It really yes, was. It thing. Really was. I mean, my big criticism of when we went to the Birmingham Guitar Show was there was a quiet period for half an hour every 2 hours, and it's just like it's so oppressive. It's so and I guess it's difficult because I mean we were there when we went there, we were there the first year we were there to do like videos and stuff, and then did we go a second time, didn't we?
Yeah,
we did. Yeah.
Yeah, and the second time I don't think we did a huge amount of video shooting. We just sort of went and like hung out with people and stuff like that. And it's not the environment to do videos. And I realised that we're kind of in the minority when we're going there trying to get like content, and that people really want to go there to try stuff. But it's just, it's so, so oppressive when you're in there, and it's like just punishing noise from everywhere. Whereas at this guitar show, you could only play loud for 15 minutes of every hour, and it just made for like a way nicer learning environment. Like, I went around and I spoke with some people that I hadn't spoken to before, like found out about Flatley pedals, which were quite cool. And, you know, it was just an opportunity to actually learn about some stuff as opposed to just try and walk away from someone playing an amp really loud. Yeah, it was good. That aspect of it absolutely was fantastic. Yeah. And I really think that that's something that all shows should adopt.
For me, I wandered around, and there wasn't as many brands there as I thought, but obviously it's quite a new show.
Were there any specifics that you could think of as that were highlights for you? Any specific pieces of gear?
I went and spoke to Adrian Thorpey Pedals, and he's announced all of his pedals in basically mini form, which is wicked. So obviously, you know, he's got a very unique design to his, so slanted with the kind of the nice side panels on. They look really like plush. Yeah. Nothing else looks like them. He's basically taken that entire form and then shrunk it down to like a third of the size.
That's a great idea, because they were obviously a very old school sort of tone bendery sort of size, but that really wasn't very appealing for people with very busy pedal boards.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to establish... I think we've talked about this before, but if you're creating a new pedal brand or anything, you kind of have to stand out in today's market. So he's really established himself by creating something that instantly you look at it and you go, that's a Thorpey pedal. But they are slightly impractical for a lot of people. So take them down to like a third of the size and just going, it's exactly the same circuit, it's the same sound... They just won't run on batteries, which, to be honest, I mean, I can't remember the last time I put a battery in a pedal. And you save a bunch of space. And they look wicked. He's done a great job of just shrinking down. I think the only one that's probably not going to come in mini formats, the new one that he's done with Pete and Ore. As far as I'm aware, that was the only one I didn't see, because that's obviously brand new. But everything else is in nice sort of miniature form, which I think is wicked.
I couldn't get anywhere near... Adrian's booth, which I think is a good thing, really, because it was... I walked past a few times and I really wanted to go over and have a look. And just every time I went there, there was a group of, you know, three or four people standing there talking to him, looking at stuff, playing stuff. And I think that's really cool. You know, it's really great that a UK builder is getting as much attention at a UK show as Adrian is at the moment. So, I thought it was great.
He's doing something different. The pedals just don't look like anything else. Yeah. They sound great. You can tell he really cares about how things sound and also how things look, and I think that's great. And you know what? Reasonable value. Pretty much everything he does is around the £200 mark as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think you could have easily whacked an extra £100 on that and people have been like, well, you know, it's boutique, whatever. But I think the price range, he's got everything. It's brilliant.
Fantastic. Were there any other standout bits, or was it really was it the Thorpey effects that had it for you?
I think it was for me it was really sort of about the Thorpey. There were a couple like Walrus were there, but they didn't really have anything massively new.
They did have that new Ryan Adams pedal though.
Oh, did they?
The one that's like the...
They were also a really busy booth. So.
They were, yeah. They had the... I can't remember what it's called, but the one that looks like a... what's it called? Battleship map or something like that.
Yeah, it's from
a film that Mark knew. And
War Games, yeah.
Yeah, it's from War Games, that's it, yeah.
1983 hit War Games.
And I tell you what else was cool that was there that I didn't get a chance to have a play of, because obviously it's just, you know, super loud there. But B-tronics were there with Walrus, and their pedals are really, really cool. They're like super industrial looking. They look like something from the Crystal Maze. from like the industrial. Is it? Was there a section called industrial?
Yeah, there was. There was industrial zone.
Yeah, they look like something that you need to figure out how it works in order to get a crystal from across a river, and they look wicked. But again, yeah, too loud. Didn't get a chance to have a go on them. But I've never seen them up front, up close before. And just the detail that goes into those is really a sight to behold.
And all their circuit boards look like honeycomb.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's super cool. What a weird, interesting, and cool feature.
One brand I did see, and I don't know if we've talked about this brand before, and I can't recall it ever. And you're probably going to say it, and you're going to be like, oh, yeah, we know those guys. So PJD guitars.
Yeah, really super modern brand.
Yeah, but they unveiled like this new hybrid, which is like a Jazzmaster they've done. It's like sort of thin body, matte black top, one humbucker. Look absolutely wicked. And somehow I just started following. They've been on my Facebook feed for like a year. And I'm like, I don't ever remember liking this brand, but I like every single guitar that they ever put up on Facebook. I think it was, yeah, it's just like a Jazzmaster, wicked matte color. They do one in P90s. They just look great.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had any direct dealings with them, but yeah, they do some really cool things. I think they did something that was kind of quite Ben Wyman-esque, a sort of offset, like hollow body Les Paul type thing that I thought was pretty cool. But yeah, wicked. Like, what a really interesting brand to kind of be like a halfway house between super modern and quite traditional. I really like the inlays that they have as well, the hollow rectangles.
Yeah, this hybrid they put up there is on their Instagram now. It looks absolutely wicked. It's like, yeah, thin body, and it's like almost like a different top to bass, because it's like natural back, black top. But yeah, definitely worth checking out. They're making some cool stuff as well.
Another stand that was there that, again, I didn't get a chance to go and have a chat to him because he was so busy the whole time. But Alistair from Atkin Guitars was there. And there was, you know, he was there with his like incredible Martin-esque acoustics, and they just up front they just look amazing. Yeah, you know, they really do look incredible. So that was really cool to see him there and see him so busy as well. So
speaking of acoustics, Ovation.
Yeah.
everyone's favorite plastic bowl back brand
only plastic bowl back brand.
were there exhibiting a new signature model that they have. Actually,
I did see something, and maybe this is the signature, but I saw some sort of crazy Ovation double neck.
Yeah, was that there? I didn't see that. Was that there?
I did see that.
Yeah. That would have been there.
Is that the one? Is it the Richie Sambora?
It is a Richie Sambora. You're absolutely right. Richie Sambora has got a double neck, half six, half 12 string black Ovation with a plastic bowl back and a very fetching star in the sort of middle of the body. It is quite an instrument. yeah, absolutely. Anyway, I guess with that we should head first into some news, as there are some interesting bits and bobs that have come out this week, unless there's anything else we should be talking about from the show.
No, I think that was kind of everything, really. It was, like I said, it was quite a small show, and I think really for their first year they did a good job getting some good brands in, but I think it just needs to grow from there, really.
Yeah, sure. It was absolutely really good to have a show in like central London, really accessible. The problem is if you've ever been in that building in Kensington Olympia, it's massive, and I think that I was expecting it to be a bit bigger than it was. I was expecting there to be more stands there. And I think that was the impression that I talked to a couple of people there, and that was kind of the impression that I got from a lot of people. And I wonder if that's just because of people sort of thinking back to guitar shows at Earl's Court when there's, you know, 150 million people walking around looking at all the brands and stuff. And you know, that's obviously not where we are at the moment, that because there's so much information on the internet that you can look at as opposed to going to a show like this. But it was really fun. It was you know, they had believe it or not, Joe, they had some vegetarian options on the menu.
Ooh, yes, that is a rarity.
That's right,
for a guitar
vegetarian
show.
Options. I mean, obviously there was no vegan option, but it was vegetarian, which is, you know, you don't get that at most guitar shows. Although last time we went to Birmingham, we had a nice chickpea curry, so that was
we did have a nice chickpea curry.
That was quite cool. But yeah, I think it's for the first one, I thought it was good, and I'll definitely go back again next year. And I hope that more people take the plunge and do it, because by all accounts, Saturday was absolutely rammo, absolutely full up is what everybody was telling us on all the stands. They said that it was totally sold out. So, you know, that's a really good, that can only be a good thing. You know, you can only sell as many tickets for these things as you make available. And if people are getting down to it, then that bodes well for the future.
Absolutely. News. So first up on the news this week,
I thought you were just mad at me. Sorry, I'm gonna.
No.
I thought no. Joe just like stopped talking after I said anything there, and obviously I realised now it was for
was
the jingle.
Leaving,
but actually,
I was leaving a gap.
Actually, I
jingle.
Thought you were. I thought you were just mad at me for saying. I thought like. Did I just say something rude? Like, what's going on?
Once again, I was so close to this sort of level of professionalism that I'm trying to achieve, but no, there it goes again.
I don't have anything, so it was just
to interrupt you. Headrush. Headrush, the company that introduced the Headrush pedal board, have released a new product. Of course, we all knew it was only going to be a matter of time, seeing as Line 6 had the Helix, they released the HX FX, and now, of course, following suit, Headrush have released their own version of a pint-sized version of their pedal. Their pedal, of course, is just called the pedal board, so this pedal is called the gig board. This actually it differs a ton from the HX FX. In fact, it's in many senses it's not the same thing. If you think the Line 6 HX FX is exactly that, it's just the effects from the Helix unit with none of the cabs or the amp sims on there. It's just the effects in sort of their simplest form. Headrush haven't gone for this option with the gig board. In fact, it is exactly the same brain that you get in the Headrush pedal board.
That's
interesting. It's just designed for people to integrate it with a pedal board with other effects, or just, you know, to use on its own as a solo board. Now, of course, the thing with Headrush and the big thing they try and sell their product on is they have that massive screen, that huge touch screen, which makes it very, very easy to create and set up all your patches and sounds. However, difficult thing to downsize and still keep usable. So the solution is they haven't downsized that screen, but where the HXFX has kept 8 buttons in total instead of the, I don't know, what do you get, 12 on a Helix, I think. This means that in the case of the Headrush, they've had to take quite a hit on the button front in order to get everything into a reasonable size. Now, it still sits a little bit larger and more heavyweight than an HXFX because of that screen. And they've reduced it to 4 switches. So to control the Headrush gig board, there's quite a lot of know-how needed. You know, it's not as simple as having one button for this, one button for that. It is a case of switching between modes, hitting 2 buttons at once to scroll up and down. Kind of in much the same way that I think Boss did with the MS3, where there's a lot of, I think with things like the Boss MS3, you need to know how to control it, or you won't be able to control it. And it's exactly the same with the Headrush. Unlike Helix stuff, which I think is designed to be really super simple, the Headrush is quite involved. But I think they've made a real good go of using those 4 switches, because of course, the way that you use those pedals is you're either controlling individual stomps or you're switching scenes around. And they've come up with quite a good way. They've come up with like a hybrid mode which actually was there on the original, on the Headrush pedal board as well, but I think it's more necessary in this, where you can assign two switches to deal with like switching up and down, and then the other two to selecting patches, which is quite useful.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you can also have even in the stomp mode, you could choose, obviously you could have, you know, the first foot switch turning on and off your drive. You could have the second foot switch changing a scene, so that could be to activate, you know, your a compressor and a delay coming in and out of there, so you can kind of, there's ways of controlling it. It's just about, you really need to know the board, I think.
Yeah, with that, because there's no like physical controls turn up or down, it's everything done on the screen. So like,
that's right,
if you have to, like, if you want to, because if I remember right, you can you do the same thing that you can do on the line six? I think this is what you were saying, where you can set the button, one button goes up, one button goes down on like delay time or something.
I see what you're saying.
Or whether you have to do it all by touching the screen, because I guess that's the only thing. It's like on the fly, this is probably not the easiest product to dial in. It's something you're going to have to dial in at home and then you kind of go out with.
I mean, I think with any switching, any digital switcher or digital multi-effects, that's the write-off, isn't it? That's the difference between... Because if you have a pedal board without a switching system or without a multi-effects and you've got eight pedals on there, you've probably got 40 rotary controls in front of you.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, you know, it's always going to be the limit is, yeah, changing individual controls on the fly is much, much trickier. I do think it's quite easy with this because it's all done on the touch screen. So it's simply a case of pressing your finger on the effect, holding your finger on the effect. It will bring up that effect's details, a nice little picture, and all the controls, and then you can use your finger. And it has nice little bars, so almost like health bars on like a Street Fighter sort of thing for the different controls for you to sort of move your finger around up and down to, which does make them like very visible and very easy to manipulate. So I think they've thought of that. They've also added an expression in for it, so you can add your own expression pedal. And yeah, again, you can assign, I was messing around, like you can assign it to several things. So I was doing things like, yeah, assigning the rate and feedback, but the reverse way round to each other, and assigning those to an expression pedal, and then you're able to sort of create those big sort of like dance floor dive bomb sort of sounds from a delay with an expression pedal. So I thought that was super cool. I think by having things like all the amps and cabs, the only thing that sat funny for me with that, I was like, why are the amps and cabs on there if the idea is that this is this is a pedal for people who have pedal boards, because it's like, well, where are you going to put your pedal? It means it has to be the last thing, doesn't it?
Oh, so you can't turn off.
You must be able to do four cables.
You could turn them off. Oh, yeah, of course you can do four cables. I never think about that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I guess you've got that. I guess you can set up something to sort of work with a board. I mean, I think it's a really cool product. You know, it's certainly.
I actually, one thing for me on the Headrush over the Helix, because I think the Helix is the only one, like, yeah, I think the HX has got a looper. The one thing that the looper function on the Headrush is quite cool, because you can actually peel back layers, which I think is quite nice.
Oh,
rather than just undoing the last thing, you can go all the way back to like the first one.
The Headrush, it's not just that, the Headrush looper for me is the most advanced, the best looper on any pedal, like, because you have you can infinitely slow down or speed up. You can either multiply or divide the speed of your loop infinitely. And it has that on an individual foot switch. So if you just go on the like multiplying one, you can turn sort of all your licks into weird sort of super fast arpeggiated things, which is so much fun. And, you know, normally that sort of setting is not there, or maybe you can get it to double time, but this, it just, you can do that over and over again to your heart's content. All right. I love that for sort of weird noises. I thought it was a really musical looper in that sense.
Actually, it's quite funny. I was just looking at, it's got less delays on than I thought, but it's got way more amp models than I thought it had.
It's a bit weird. I've found their Headrush stuff like a little bit weird. It's almost like Now, do you have enough people working in your sort of effects team?
I guess they,
there's not
they,
a lot on there.
They come from the
11 rack stuff.
The 11 rack, which was much more of a studio amp modeler device than it was a massive multi effects.
But do you know, it was only one update ago that they put an octaver on there.
Yeah, that's a bit weird.
That, who uses
mad,
octavers?
Isn't it?
It's 2018.
Oh, come on.
Best effect ever,
everyone.
It makes you sound and, more like a bass, but you're not a bass
and
player.
And you know, it was only this. They put an update out, because the same update applies to the gig board as the pedal board. They put an update out, I think, at the end of last week, or late last week. And it was the first time they had Shimmer on there, which I thought was crazy. I would have thought, if you want to think about modern guitar, then it's all like pitch shifting and shimmer delays. Like that's, you know, all the effects crazy people are going to use those two things. And this is supposed to be a unit for creating all of that.
Yeah, but also, is it necessarily designed for people like that? Or is it designed for someone who maybe had a Boss ME70 that they bought 10 years ago and have been using that in their covers band for the last, 10 years, and now want to get an update? I kind of understand why you want to. You've got to nail the basics. You've got to have good sounding cab sims. You've got to have good sounding drives and good sounding reverbs, and then you start going down the crazy route, because whilst people like you, Joe, people who are into like mad effects are more likely to give something like this a go, I think that the people who will actually be buying it, at least the early days, will be people who need a one-stop shop. And
absolutely.
And therefore, someone who's going to want something that does, does this do the sound of a data corruptor? Of course not. Why is that? Because like that's not what people who use these products necessarily want. And once they've nailed everything, maybe they'll put some crazy bit crushing arpeggiating reverbing chorusing delay tremolo thing in there, or whatever the data corruptor is, because I still don't really know. And but until then, you've got to nail the basics, and you've got to, it might be a bit boring, but and I think, thankfully, Headrush and also Helix have made something that's like fairly utilitarian. They've made it without it being boring, which I think has always been a downfall of these sorts of products in the past. The GT100, I thought, was a really powerful unit at the time, but it was a bit boring. Same as all of those like Digitech pedal. The RP series they were always a bit complicated and a bit clunky, but they were always a bit boring, but they did serve a purpose, and that purpose was for people who need to do lots of different things in a short period of time.
Yeah, you're absolutely
and,
right.
And I just think that Helix and Headrush are kind of in a bit of a space race at the moment, because they are both doing a similar sort of thing, but they're doing it in a very cool and modern way, which I think is really exciting to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you're completely right. The sort of people that have traditionally always bought these things are people that require a vast amount of versatility.
Yeah.
And that means wedding bands, covers bands.
Yeah, exactly.
People like that. And actually, again, when I had the guys from Headrush showing me the gig board, one of the things they were most keen to show me, which was the thing that I had no interest in, was the setlist mode.
Yeah,
because
you
how you can easily set things up so you can change. Yeah, and I was like, oh, I don't care about that. I just want to add five delays in a row.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, I don't know if you can do that. But like, we've already set up Get Lucky. That's the first one. You can play that straight away.
Yeah, exactly. But
last preset is always Mr. Brightside. Like that's you can't change that. Like that has to be the last song.
It's locked in.
Yeah.
It's burnt into the screen.
Great. Yeah. Anyway, we're a fantastic product from Headrush. I really think it's worth checking out. I think it's coming in at around the same price as the HX FX is. So it will be interesting to see how it does. I think it is super exciting. Matt Knight,
yes.
Speaking of effects pedals, some old favourites of ours, Old Blood Noise Endeavours, have brought something new to the table.
Yes, they've updated their Reflector Chorus unit. So they're now on version 3. of their awesome little course unit called the Reflector. So they've updated it every year since it came out, and it's basically a combined pitch shifting, flanger, and multi-voice chorus all in one box.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah, so perfect, you know, when you want to play Mr. Brightside, but you also want it to sound really, really messed up because you're going using a washed reverb into a chorus or a resonant filter and a chorus going together, then this is the perfect box. Effectively, three different modes, wrinkle mode, washed mode, and mirrors mode, give you a bunch of different combinations of pitch shifted signal or chorus signal with some reverb added in. There's true pitch vibrato if you go completely wet, and then there's chorus sounds in between. Rate and depth controls, obvious. But then you've also got a pitch shifter that go a full octave down to a full octave up, and then also a control to blend in the reverb with full expression pedal control. It's a really wicked unit if you want something that sounds really quite out of the ordinary but very usable at the same time. It's not like, as Jay was saying, with Data Corruptor, it's a wicked pedal, but you...
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Know when you've turned it on. This one just gives you a nice ambient wash if you want it. You can certainly get it to go totally mental. But, you know, reasonably priced chorus reverb that kind of adds a whole range of depth to your sound. So it's nice to see them sort of update one of their more popular units continuously. So, yeah, third year in the row.
Oh, man, I love the name Old Blood Noise Endeavors. That's the coolest name for an effects brand.
Yeah, great artwork. And also, we've mentioned it several times before, awesome manuals, because they put in the staff's favourite settings rather than just like, this one sounds quite good or this one sounds quite good. It's like, oh, Steve, who like puts them together, he loves this sound. And I just really like that. I thought it was just a really nice touch.
And in addition to that, the manuals are actually posters.
Yes.
They fold out to be posters and then have the instructions on the reverse of that, which
yes.
is super
that
cool.
That's classic like Hellcat Records like CD insert. That's what that is. I bet these people all grew up listening to like NoFX and Rancid and stuff because
all
of the lyric sheets did that. Like I had this great one for that first Transplants record, which is like sounds really dated, but there's a couple of songs on there that are just still so good and I listen to fairly regularly. But I had this great Transplants poster that came with the CD that I bought in like 2002 or
my
something.
God, that reminded me. Yeah, Green Day Insomniac.
Yeah, I bet that did the same thing.
That cover folded out as a poster. Wow, that's the last time I bought a Green Day record. That came out in 1995.
How old were you in 1995?
Oh, no, I mean, I didn't buy it.
Oh, okay, I was going to say.
I probably bought it in 99.
Were you like 10?
Nine. Yeah. it was punk rock from a young age. Jay Cross, Fender, surprising that you're going to talk about Fender stuff. Fender have brought some new things to the table, but not just any Fenders. We're talking about Japanese. Are these going to be Japanese import? Or are they just for the Japanese market?
So these are part of the Japanese traditional range, which is basically, I don't really understand the how like the nomenclature works, but essentially it's just like a cool traditional-esque spec, but they look unbelievable. So this is part of the Midnight collection, which is a Strat, a Tele, and a P bass, and they are ebony, like they're black with black pick guards. Rose.
Is it satin black?
Satin.
Or gloss
no, it's right. gloss. I think it's gloss. Right. Yeah, I think they're just like a gloss, like a standard gloss black. Black pick guards, matching head cap, and gold hardware. And normally, as soon as anybody says to me gold hardware, I'm like, that's it's going to be too bling, it's too awful. However, this matched with the like all black finish, they look so, so good. They look so, so cool. They're really classy.
So what were the three models again? A Strat?
So there's a Strat, a Tele, and a P-Bass. Like, really, really, like, you know, it's a really simple simple line. They're all sort of 700... no, they're not. They're more... I think they're like a grand. I can't remember the exact price, to be honest with you, because we only announced them yesterday, and I don't even think they have made it onto a website yet, but I think they're about a grand. But yeah, honestly, they look absolutely amazing. Traditional sort of Japanese... Strat and Tele pickups. So I can't remember the exact what they're actually called. I think they're just called like vintage voiced. But they've all got U necks. So they're quite chunky necks. They all look and they sound absolutely incredible. So I would definitely recommend checking those out once anybody gets a blog post up about them. They're pretty limited. I can't remember exactly how many. It's not really my area, but these are certainly worth a look, because they are bloody cool.
So a company like Fender have made so many guitars and so many models. Is there somewhere? I just want a list of it. I was trying to find it for Electro-Harmonics once. Just a list of every single variation of every single model that's ever come out.
I think
there must be like a history catalogue somewhere.
I think I can access it. I think there's something that I can see that's
so
like
going all the way back to like,
yeah. Basically, there's 49. So to answer your question, there's like not really an official one, but there's kind of a project that's been going on. That's a bunch of people who have worked for Fender for a long time, kind of just like piecing information back together, because it's like, well, who remembers what was made in January 1973? Like, literally nobody, you know. But if every now and again you put together, there's some information that shows up, it gets put into a system that's being created. So I guess maybe at some point something might come out, but like you say, there's just so many models. I mean, even this year, think about how many guitars have come out just this year alone. It's so difficult to keep everything going. I think that we've got a fairly coherent list for the last, probably the last 10 to 15 years at least. But, you know, that's only, that's not even a quarter of Fender's history. So
it was funny because with Boss, like when we did the event last year, it was easy enough, obviously, to get all the compacts. Mm-hmm. That's easy. And then a couple of the variations. But then when you start diving into the other products we've made in the other categories, and you're like, stuff turns up you had no idea that we ever made.
Yeah, and presumably, you know, with all of the stuff that you had there, like the rubbish bin and the...
Like all the RAM items. That's the name of the code. Like all the promo items that.
Yeah, presumably a lot of that stuff is licensed. You know, you probably didn't even make most of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So even like when I was out in Japan, there's a big chain of music stores out there who were doing a Boss promotion where if you buy a Boss pedal, you get some Boss chopsticks. But they weren't running it anywhere outside of that one store. And they were created by the local Boss team, and just like no one would ever really know about it. So there's a bunch of merchandise and stuff out there that, you know, you never see. And I was even talking to Tim from Mojo Stomp Boxes, and he sent me this picture of this old SP1, and the box looked like a normal Boss box, but the actual base was polystyrene. And it turns out that we only made them in those boxes for like a couple months in Japan only, but they still exist. It's one of the first ever pedals made still in its box, in a totally different type of box to normal. But the hardest brand, the reason I ask is because obviously so many things come out from Japan, and that is Electro-Harmonics. They've made so much weird stuff in the 70s. There's just no record on it, and no one's got anything anywhere about it. But even in the variations in circuits and things, and it'd just be so good to be able to compile something like that, especially for Fender, going, look at the sheer amount of guitars and not just for the weird stuff, but just for like that, you know, things like this that come out that, like, you necked Fenders that were basically like Japanese made. Like,
totally.
Wow, cool.
I mean, you know, there's some that there's a relative amount of coherence around the serial numbers and stuff, which is why we can usually check to see if something is real, or at least to see if it's a real serial number. We quite often get people phoning up and saying, look, I've bought this guitar off of someone. They reckoned it was a 1988 Strat. This is a serial number, can you check? And what we can do is, you know, we can have a look and see what the we can check to see if the serial number matches and to see what the spec is. But the whole point of these guitars when they were made, you know, Leo Fender made them to be modular, and so that's why, you know, necks get swapped and parts get swapped out, and so quite often it can be difficult 20 years down the line to authenticate anything, and which is why we don't authenticate anything over the phone or anything like that, obviously. But like you say, it would be cool to have a proper catalogue, but you know, a history of everything. But I just can't even imagine how big it would be, because there's so many SKUs, you know. It's just bonkers. It really is bonkers how much stuff comes out. You know, you think about it, we're halfway between Summer NAMM and Winter NAMM, and you think, oh yeah, nothing will come out now until January. It's like, okay, well, here's three guitars that are launched in October. You know, it's really cool. It's very exciting.
Where does it all go?
Speaking about things that are modular, got that segue in, yes. Nexi Industry pedals. I bloomin' well love Nexi pedals. We've spoken about them on the podcast before. I think they're absolutely fantastic. You can buy their rubberized, spill-free, it's not spill-free, like spill-proof pedal board and
I can't believe that's that's like the thing that you go with. That's the feature that you go with. Oh yeah, you spill some water on it. Doesn't matter. Spill-proof.
It doesn't matter. It is spill-proof. And what's even better, there are no visible cables. The pedals themselves connect magnetically to the board in the allocated 4 or 8 slots on their boards, complete with a built-in boost and a built-in tuner. Yes, we have spoken about them before. Listener, if you don't remember or if you haven't heard the podcast where we've spoken about them, please go and check out Nexi pedals. I think they are super cool. And the effects, the individual effects themselves can be powered. Normally, you can run them into a pair of jack cables, and they're very affordable. I think they're all sub £100 for the effects. Now, that, of course, isn't new. But what is new is that Nexi Industries are collaborating with Orianthe. That's right. We've managed to get in double neck. Richie Sambora is Double Neck Ovation. So how fortuitous that we also get to talk about Orianthe in this podcast. Now, we don't know exactly what the pedals are, because Nexi have just sort of got a bit excited and been like, we're making some pedals for Orianthe, so they don't even know what they are going to be yet, but they are. So this is kind of non-news news, but it's still cool. I love Nexi pedals. Yeah. I'm really glad that they're expanding the range. Orianthe has said she's looking to create something that's very, very tone focused. I mean, she's shreddy, but she's she has that blues-esque nature to her tone. So I think really what we'll be looking at is some sort of transparent drives, some sort of bluesy drives, and I don't know what the second one would be.
I love their website, because you scroll down and there's some products and there's some pedal of the month, and then because obviously one great thing is you don't have to have one of the Nexi pedals to work with their board. You know they work for other pedals as well, and you can get the little connector adapters. And then they've got this like new Urban pedal series. It's got like a looper and stuff on. And then you scroll down, there's a picture of Jimi Hendrix. Blues is easy to play but hard to feel. I'm like, Jimi Hendrix didn't use Nexi pedals.
Yes, he did, mate.
And
yes,
what
he
they've
did.
Done is they've slung a load of, well, because the one that got me was Josh Homme from Queens of Stone Age. I was like, he's using Nexi pedals. Wow, that's a surprise. And then it went to Nikki Six from Motley Crue, and I was like, I can see that. And then it went to Jimi Hendrix and David Gilmour, and I'm like, oh, they've just put some random
famous guitar players. It's better to burn out than to fade away. Kurt Cobain, Nexi pedals.
Yeah, well,
you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. Nexi pedals.
I do really want to give these a little bit more of a go. I just want to like feel the pedal board and like. Because I know I was talking to you.
Oh, it's lovely. It feels great. It's all rubbery. I love it. It's like Batman's suit.
That's what they should have called it. the Batman board or something. I don't know. Next, he just is like, eh. But I was talking to Ace from Skunk Fantasy, who's now doing all the stuff at ACM, and he switched his entire rig over to these. And this man whose rig I followed since the day I started playing guitar bass, he was the reason I got into effects pedals, and now he's like switched to this this board. So I'd be quite interested to sort of see.
I'm glad you didn't follow suit on his taste in guitars, but
He played a really wicked Les Paul back in the day.
Oh, really? Did he? Yeah, he plays PRS now, doesn't he?
He does. He's played PRS for a long time.
It was not long after I started at GAC. We sold him two Joe Strummer signature tellies.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Which weren't very good. As someone who loves tellies and loves Joe Strummer, those tellies weren't very good.
Were those the ones that were sort of finished in like black primer?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So they just relicked. Well, they got smashed up really easily. Not smashed up. They just got,
scuffed.
And it was, I didn't really like those. I didn't really like them. But, that's the point. Someone will. If you build it,
they will
buy it.
Matt Knight, Ola England's guitar company, Solar, have introduced even more models. It feels like it's every couple of weeks we're talking about new guitars from Solar at the moment.
Yeah, well, they're doing something a little bit different because they're building guitars in limited runs. So they basically have the same body shape, the same body design, which are then done in a bunch of different ways. So you've kind of got this one with obviously now the burl top, but they also do one with slightly different cutaway and a different kind of curvature to the cutaways as well.
Oh, really? I thought it was just the main sort of the super strat style, the flat top, the uncarved version of
this. They do. Yeah, basically it's a flat top and a carved version, but most of them are in like limited runs or limited colours.
And so these are now a limited burl range.
Burl top.
Right?
Yeah. So I was talking to Ola when I was out in Japan with him about the brand and what he does. And he actually, up until recently, in fact, I think he still does, said he goes to where they're built. I can't remember the exact place where they're built. And they go over, him and one other person, and they play every single guitar in a run, which might be like 500 guitars.
He's such a madman.
And then they get shipped to Spain, which is where they're distributed from in Europe. And someone else then also checks them over there as well. And he's so particular about the guitars and the way they play and feel. Because I was like, oh, do you have like a favourite guitar you play when you do videos? He's like, nope, I'll just take a Solar that I've just got straight from the factory. Whichever one's near me, I'm so confident in all of them. I don't really ever just stick to one.
That's really cool.
Because
really
they all feel the way that I want them to feel. And that's the guitar that I've made for other people. And then they're Seymour Duncan designed Ola pickups. Yeah, wicked four colours in the bowl top.
What other colours?
So the actual colours, if I can get the names up, they're doing a lime burst, blue burst, solar burst, which is kind of like a reddy orange sunburst, and then a poplar burst, which is
sort of greater
brown. Yeah, it's like a greater brown. Yeah, similar, I guess. If you're not in front of a computer, remind me of the Ibanez burls that they did. Because the burl is that sort of like gnarly bit of wood that grows out the side of a tree, basically, that you cut off and then they use on the top of the guitars. It's a five-piece maple Chitoba neck, mahogany body, poplar burl top, Seymour Duncan pickups, locking tuners. They come with a gig bag, hip shot fixed bridge, and they are about $999 or $1199, depending on which finish.
That's a cracking range of features. Like on the modern guitar front, I know sort of Ibanez really, really set a precedent with these, but certainly I think with Chapman and with these Solars, we're seeing that's a lot of guitar for $1,000.
Yeah, I think and I spoke to him a lot about the factory and where they're built, and I think you're just getting such great quality guitars from these big guitar manufacturers out in the Far East that they're just, and they're built to limited numbers. They're not cranking out thousands and thousands and thousands a day of one brand. They're doing maybe 500, 300 over the course of like a month, 10 guitars a day or something like that. So I think you just get a lot more attention to detail. And because you know, they're directly involved in the guitars, the same as Chapman. They have so much control over the quality, and if they want to change something, it's easy to adopt that into a run. So what we're starting to see now is, for these smaller brands, which I think is really nice, is guitars that like adapt and evolve over time. So they change with like people's needs or like people's requests. They can start to filter those into the runs of guitars down the line. They've not got to go, oh, we've got we've made 5,000 now, so we've got to get through those before we do something else. They're like, it's just a limited run or it's a small run. Now on the next run, we can do a whole bunch of different stuff. So
yeah, it makes so much sense. It's such a great way to do it.
Yeah, they look really cool guitars. They do a wicked looking baritone. The only shame with these is obviously they do go direct and they don't really have a dealer at the moment, so they're difficult to try. But they, to me, if they're anything like the Chapman guitars, especially the Pro range, and the feel and the quality of those, definitely worth picking up if you want sort of like a rock or metal orientated guitar.
Absolutely. J Cross, it's that time of the month again.
Parallel Universe.
Parallel Universe, absolutely. What Fender Parallel Universe has been released now?
Yeah, really, really going after that high quality. This one is actually a lot cooler in real life than I think anybody was really expecting at the time when it was first announced. So the Jaguar Strat, which on face value kind of looks a bit like a Burns, like a bit like a Bison. It's got that like yeah, big oversized pick guard and
it's those the three pickups being straight. Absolutely. That's quite Burnsy.
Yeah, it really is. However, what is really cool about this, and what I wasn't expecting, is the switching options. So
first of all, to explain, this is a Stratocaster body.
Strat body with Jaguar electronics. So there's three pickups, which obviously you would expect from a Strat, but as you say, they're all straight. But it's got all the kind of bells and whistles that you'd expect with a Jaguar. So it's got Jaguar trim, which again is like such a huge block of metal there in the middle of that Strat body. It's really like you look at it and it's really. I'm not sure that I'm understanding what's going into my eyes here, but it's very, very cool. Mustang bridge, which makes it, you know, a lot more usable than you expect. And the three pickups are American Vintage 65 Jaguars. So they're pickups that are, they're quite raw, but really, really nice sounding. However, the thing that I think really excites me about this guitar is the switching options. So obviously you would expect from a Jaguar, you know, you've got the rhythm and tone circuit that you can switch between. And quite often you'll have like a thumb wheel or whatever. What they've done here with this is you've got two rhythm and tone circuit style switches. So, you know, normally you could switch between, you can switch up or down, and that will either bring in or take out the tone and volume controls on a Jaguar. What this does is when you engage the first switch, so it's just a two-way switch. When it's off, it's just you've just got a regular five-way selector switch for your Strat pickups in your Jaguar with your Jaguar pickups in your Strat body. However, when you turn it on, you then have the second switch, which gives you get this correct. Looking at this, I had this all nailed down until you came to me, and now I've totally messed it up. So, dedicated thumb wheel tone control so that there's a thumb wheel on there that allows you to control the tone on the bridge pickup. While upper switch middle pickup alone. So the other thing that you can do is with your the second switch there, when the switch is in the middle, it can bring in all three pickups at once. So you can have all three pickups running instead of just...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Sorry, I've realised I've explained this really badly, and that's because I've read and reread the product description a number of times, trying to just make sure I'm saying it correctly. But, yeah, let me just... five-way switch is joined by the dedicated thumb wheel for the to control the bridge pickup, while dual up-about switches allow position three to select either the middle pickup alone or all three pickups at once for a powerful blast of tone. The match set of vintage-style single-core Jaguar pickups are as period-correct as possible and have period-correct, you know, for a Jaguar Strat. and have the authentic sound of the 60s. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's just totally, totally mad. Totally mad. Being able to have all three pickups on at the same time is something that I can't think of. Did Matty, perhaps you can remember this, did the American Deluxes with the S1 switch have an option to turn all three pickups on at once? I think they did.
I'm just thinking, because I've got on my Strat, I had the kind of neck bridge thing added, which technically
is the same, is essentially the same thing.
The same thing, because if you add the neck and bridge, when you're in
the middle position,
you add the middle position, then you get all three. No, when you're in two and four.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Of course. One. Yeah.
So yes, you do get all three. And it is a fairly sort of unique sound. But usually it's only ever done through mods. I can't, do you know what? It was one thing that I sort of did learn off the top of my head eventually.
What the S1 switches.
The exact switching on an S1. But then the thing is the S1 also added like some out phase options, which sound great when you've got load to drive and you're Gary Moore. But when you're going super clean into a Blues Junior, sound absolutely dreadful because you lose all the bass and all the thickness of your guitar sound. So I just usually tell people, just play around with the normal controls first and see if you like the sound of the pickups. Then there's an extra button here if you want it. But I think there was some sort of all three pickups on at once, or there was some sort of phasing option that gave you like a beefier sound if you use two of them together.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely interesting. It's definitely versatile.
Yeah.
I think for me that the White Guard Strat, which was that last month?
Yeah,
the,
I think
the
so.
The White Guard Strat, which was the Stratocaster with Telecaster pickups and a Telecaster neck and headstock. For me that was definitely the coolest, but it was also probably the most tasteful, as in almost the least crazy.
I also think that the White Guard Strat is just a really cool, it's kind of an inside joke, you know, because you've got the Black Guard Tele and now there's the White Guard Strat. I just think it's a funny inside joke, but this I think looks cool. It's completely bonkers. I think it really epitomizes what the Parallel Universe series is kind of all about, which is just take two weird guitars and make them weirder, you know. I think it's very cool, and it's very fun that Fender is doing this. You know, this isn't the sort of thing that you would normally expect from a company like Fender, so I think it's really cool.
Absolutely. Matt Knight, before we head off on this podcast, as if there weren't enough / signature models with the announcement of the Epiphone Firebirds last week or the week before, something else has slipped out of his slashiness. Well, what has Slash got now?
Well, where is my top hat, friends? Because I need to put it on and play my new Gibson / Brazilian Dream, which also sounds like some sort of weird wax. $13,000, only available in America, limited to 150 instruments. They say 150 instruments worldwide. I mean, basically in America. They are a Sunburst, I guess, a two-tone Sunburst based on, I'm not going to say his 58, because they've said original 50s spec. So I think they've taken parts of what he likes about various different Les Paul. So it's a long tenon neck join, 58 C profile, but a similar look and feel, they say, to a 59 Les Paul, which is kind of a bit conflicting. Sort of vintage specs on everything, open pickups, And yeah, basically a Brazilian rosewood fretboard. And now that's where the US only comes into play, because of CITES regulations, you can only purchase it in the USA. They're obviously not creating the CITES certificates to be shipped elsewhere. So when, for example, Taylor did their all Brazilian rosewood acoustics, they created a CITES passport effectively, which is massive documents, tens of, I think it was almost like 100 pages that you had to have with this guitar, and had to go out with it and ship it. And when I previously had a Friedman guitar on order, the reason it took so long is they were trying to get their CITES certificate. So I think they've probably gone, can't be bothered to that for 150 guitars, so we're going to keep it to the US only.
I actually, Matty, I actually don't even think it's that. From what my understanding is that outside of America, Brazilian rosewood is illegal. It's like, oh, okay. It's like ivory. Unless the Brazilian, and I'm not 100% sure, but unless the Brazilian rosewood is before like 1994 or something, you can't have it in Europe.
Well, I think that's where the CITES comes in, because CITES certificate is the proof of
Brazilian rosewood is just illegal, but rosewood itself, like if you get rosewood from Indonesia or somewhere, that's where the CITES, that's what the CITES documents basically states, is it says this rosewood was legally and sustainably felled, essentially, yeah. is what the CITES application and documents say. So, but yeah, my understanding is Brazilian rosewood is just illegal out pretty much everywhere except for the US.
Yeah,
and Brazil, I guess. I don't know, yeah. But yeah, so that's why it can't leave the US.
Right. If anyone out
and,
there
and it's not just if anyone's got, you know, 13 grand burning a hole in their pocket and they are desperate to get this, not only can you not buy it in like the UK, but even if you were to fly to the US, buy it in the US and then bring it back to the UK, for example, if you were caught with it, they would take it off you and they would probably burn it. Because
it's a good way to burn 13 grand.
Well, totally. But yeah, it's just in this country, it's completely illegal.
I mean, I've got to say, I'm not... I know, obviously, Slash is the brand ambassador, and obviously, I think he's still, as we've said on a podcast a few months back, he's still one of the biggest guitar influencers out there as a guitar player, because I think, you know, people have moved to a different way that they soak up their guitar information and moved away from what artists are using and more what, you know, the kind of players using you see on YouTube and stuff like that, rather than going out and gigs. Slash is one of those people where, you know, he's got a dedicated fan base and young people are also getting in Slash. But I've got to say, this guitar for me, I know you feel differently, Jay, it's really boring for £13,000.
Well, yeah, I mean, we talked about this
a little bit beforehand. It's a plain maple top.
See, that's what I want, though. That's what I want. Like, the thing that annoys me about most Les Pauls is they've got these horrible flame maple-y tops, which I cannot get on with. I just don't like them at all. And this is like a plain top, sunburst, like not a little bit of figuring on there, but it's only kind of like the natural subtle figuring that you'd get. It's not like book matched in any way. It's just a cool looking Les Paul. Don't get me wrong, I'm not spending 13 grand on it and then trying to worm my way through customs with it. But yeah, I think I wish there were more Les Pauls that looked like this, as opposed to the sort of current trend for super flamey Les Pauls.
I would just love it to have covered pickups.
That I agree. That I definitely agree. I've never really got on with uncovered pickups.
Should also worth noting that each one is signed by him and comes with a bunch of fun/collateral items.
Top hat?
If it doesn't come with a top hat, I will eat my hat.
What, top hat?
I'll eat the top hat that they can't give me.
Joe, just before you cut off, and I realise that we're right up at time, don't know if you've seen this, but there's actually, Epiphone have literally just announced another guitar 18 minutes ago. Like,
Well.
Super hot off the press, they've just announced a new guitar.
to learn about that, you'll have to join us over on our Patreon episode, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to bonus features and mini-series such as Branton's Rant. $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honor of having your name read out in one breath by me.
You're going to be able to do it, do you reckon?
Yeah, I can do it. Yeah, the tens are pretty solid at the moment. There's obviously the few.
I was trying
off.
To get you some noise to play along with.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Ethan Jebediah Bartier, Stephen Conrady, Scott Hamilton, Ivor John Mayercross, Merrin Peters, Gordon G. Richard III, Sean Arbo, Joshua Mitchell, Chris Wolfman, Cuthbertson, Ryan McDermott, Robert Cousins, Rob Grew, Nate Nagel, Tucker Amadon, Ernie Cooper, Emily James Baker, Christoph Raptis, Zane Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Whitson, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sherman, Blake Weiland, Jake Gray, Christopher Loseth, Ron Cole, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordrick, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Mancha, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Mark Cross, Brad Page, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Will Thompson, Will Grabeck, Colin Anderson!
Matt, what's that weird noise?
I was giving Joe a very synthy backing track that I sped up annoyingly fast as he went along.
Well, there you have it. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That is it from us this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye-bye.